Once again, happy Father's Day. And thank you. Today is my birthday. I'm 7 years old. No, I really am. I'm 7 years old. I made a rule that once I got to 39, I'd start counting backwards, 38, 37. So I'm 7 years old now. So if you want to do the math, those of you who are not math majors, I'm 76 today. So thank you. I talked to my wife this morning, and she said, "Honey, I forgot, how old are you?" And I said, I'm 76, and we were talking on the phone on the way over here, and she said, "You're 76? I said, "Yeah." "And you're 74. And she says, "You didn't have to say that." We feel old sometimes. I want to thank Brock and Laura Lee for doing this bulletin. We hope to have this for you every week. I find that if you have the prayer requests there and the announcements there, you tend to remember them better. You can put them on the refrigerator door with a magnet and refer to them as you need to. And I hope that you take advantage of that. Feel free to make notes about the sermon. Usually, I find that during the sermon, if somebody's making notes, it's their things to do list for the next week because they're not really paying attention. So, I want to also stress next Sunday, June the 26th, Mark Richardson, our state pastor, is going to be here. And I asked him to come and speak, and he said he would. And he said, "What time does the service start?" And I says, 10 o'clock until the third altar call. And he said, "Well, I'll bring my Benny Hinn wave and my vibrating hand, and we'll have all three altar calls." He's looking forward to being here with you, because afterward we're having a pitch-in dinner and a congregational meeting. And we wanted to hear from him. We're going to have a report from the search committee. Your governing board has some reports to make. We're going to have a wonderful time next Sunday. If you can at all plan to be here, please do that next Sunday, the 26th. I find that a good Father's Day sermon and a good Mother's Day sermon applies not just to fathers or mothers, but to all within a congregation. And so I want to continue my onward study. I love to spend time with the life of David. I find that there's very interesting things to be found there, especially in 2 Samuel. And the passage today comes from the 23rd chapter of 2 Samuel. And it talks about what's called the 30 mighty men. Now, the 30 mighty men, please do not take that numerical term literally, because as you read through the Bible and do a serious study, you will find that there are sometimes more than 30, and sometimes there are less than 30. But it's like how the Army sometimes says, SEAL Team 6 is something like that's the team. But the people on the team come and go. Sometimes it's more men in that a regiment than there are previously. The number varies. So this is a listing of the mighty men of valor. And these are the people who have won what we would consider today our Medal of Honor, the Congressional Medal of Honor, the top men. These are the cream of the crop. They have shown exceptional heroism. And here it is, approximately 1,000 years B.C., and already we are having people who are being named as exceptionally heroic people. Let's just go through this list of superheroes. There are three specifically. The first one is Josheb. Josheb, it talks about him in chapter 23, verse 8. "And the names of David's mighty men, Josheb, Beth, Attakan," I'm not sure where, I could not find what Attakamoth was. I don't know what nationality that is. "He was chief of the three. He raised his spear against 800 men whom he killed in one encounter." Okay, this is, let's describe this man in words and terms that we all can understand. Tom Cruise. Top Gun. Killer Ace, Steel Team 6. He killed 800 men single-handed. He was militarily a legend. He fought his battles, and he fought them courageously. Now, I want to refer to this because he was one big one-time winner. If you want to write that down next to his name in your worship folder, he was a big one-time winner. Here was this man who took this one battle and made his name for himself. Sometimes we have battles in our lives and we fail. We fall flat on our face. But there are times when we come through and we know, nailed it. You know, we get it right. And we feel good that God has strengthened us, that we've done it right. And this was that, that's that for this guy. Our battles that we face in our lives are often unexpected. They're many times frightening. And I'm sure you faced them at one point or another. Perhaps it was a family crisis, or it was some ethical battle in your business, or it was a medical emergency, something that has to do with the body or the spirit. Sometimes it seems like a small thing, but it has epic proportions and great ramifications. It will affect how the rest of your life goes. It defines you, really. It establishes whether or not people can trust you, whether you can trust yourself. And you have to take a stand and you have to fight. And all the things that have happened to you before, all your previous life, has prepared you for this moment. And you need to take that stand to have that one big time win. And afterwards, things somehow seem to be better, because you know you can handle anything that's come to you. It's better at those times when those battles need to be fought. It is time for us to raise our spear. It is time for us to fight that battle. That was the story with this gentleman. Now, the second person that's named is Eleazar. In verses 9 and 10 of 2 Samuel 23, next to him was Eleazar, the son of Dodai, the Ararite. As one of the three mighty men, he was with David when they taunted the Philistines, gathered at Pasdamanon for battle. And then the men of Israel retreated, but he stood his ground and struck down the Philistines until his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. The Lord brought about a great victory that day. The troops returned to Eleazar, but only to strip the dead. This is a story of what is undoubtedly a soldier's worst nightmare, to find himself alone in a field facing everybody else, and you're saying, bring it on, and all those around you desert. And you're left there all alone. He stood his ground. He fought to his own exhaustion. I have a grandson who now is 24. But when he was younger, he was trying to teach Grandpa how to play Xbox. It was not a good experience. He beat me soundly. But the main reason he beat me, has anybody played Xbox or PlayStation? You know that little Doomba Flocker thingamabob, whatchamacallit? Yeah, a controller, thank you. I have a technical term for it. It's called a thingamabob, whatchamacallit, doo-walker. But I'm sitting here trying so hard to show my superiority to my grandson that literally my fingers are cramping up. Have you played like that? And you're sitting going, oh, man. That's what happened to Eleazar. He had gripped this sword so tightly for so long. Well, maybe he was old enough like I am, that his fingers cramped up and he could not release the sword. It was just that tightly in his hands. And everybody else backed away. He kept the sword and he kept fighting. Sometimes in our lives, We have to fight for what's right even when all those around us back away. We have to have the courage to fight alone. We have to keep faith in what we believe is right when others cave in. We have to do what is moral in a time, in a world of immorality. We have to engage in understanding and underscoring our ethics at a time when others are questioning their own ethics. We have to know and show and demonstrate that we are on the Lord's side. Shema, the third of the three mighty men. Next to him was Shema, the son of Agi, the Ararite, and when the Philistines banded together at a place where there was a field full of lentils, Israel's troops fled from them. But Shema stood his ground, and in the middle of the field he defended it and struck the Philistines down, and the Lord brought about a great victory. He stood his ground. As Eleazar stood his ground, Shema took his stand. Shema took his stand, and he decided that a field of lentils, a bean field, was an appropriate place to fight for. He had reasons to take that and to defend that, and he decided it was worth dying for. It may seem silly to say that, but that field of lentils was not just a field of lentils, but it was in a place that was strategically important. It needed to be held. And sometimes a certain patch of ground in any military endeavor needs to be held, that other places that are even more important might be secure. And that's what he did that day. He picked that battle very carefully. If anybody has ever had the opportunity to go to Gettysburg, the battlefield in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. It can become, if you do it correctly, it's a life-changing experience. I went to visit some friends who were living out in Maryland, and they said, let's go up to Gettysburg. And we went up there, and he hired this tour guide and literally got in the car and talked to us as we drive through the battlefield. And me, being a history buff that I am, I literally had one of those little micro cassette recorders that the lady didn't know I was recording her, but I was recording her so I could later preach the sermon, and you're welcome. But I recorded her, and she was telling the story about Joshua Chamberlain. Now, Joshua Chamberlain was a professor at a college, at a seminary at one point, and he volunteered with the 20th Maine Volunteers. Well, during the course of the 4 years previous to that of the war, his 20th Regiment of the Maine Volunteers had been pretty much decimated, and they needed to refill the ranks of those people. Those ranks were filled with people who were primarily deserters from the Union Army, and they found them, they rounded them up, and they put them back into service, and they put them into this regiment called the 20th Maine Volunteers from the state of Maine. They were told during that Battle of Gettysburg that they had to defend this one hill that is known as Little Round Top, and they had to hold that hill. It may seem like it, even the name, Little Round Top, it's not a very strategic, not a very important place, but strategically it was absolutely vital to winning that battle. And so they fired on all the raids and all the charges that the Confederates made against Little Round Top. And after the third charge, all their ammunition was gone. Joshua Chamberlain said, "Men, fix bayonets." And they put the bayonets on their rifles. The charge came up the hill, and they held the hill, fighting hand to hand. And every person, every deserter that was in the Maine Volunteers became heroes that day and won the battle. And anyone who knows about the history of the Civil War will tell you that the Battle of Gettysburg is what won the Civil War. So it is with our battles. We have to understand that we don't always choose our battles. Our battles choose us. We are not always in the place we want to be, but that's where we are, and we have to fight there. We have to know that there is no quitting and there is no retreating. We have to fight with every weapon in our arsenal, and we have to fight on the Lord's side. And notice there in verse 12, and the Lord brought about a great victory. There are other names that are listed throughout that 23rd chapter of 2 Samuel. We can go through every one of them. How Abishai was brave, even though he didn't have a title. How Abinadi saw an opportunity and took advantage of it. How Uriah, who was the husband of Bathsheba, who David was having an affair with, was set up to lose. But even in his death, he became a hero. While he was wronged, he did what was right. Now, who are your heroes? Perhaps it was a Sunday school teacher that when you were young said the right thing to you at the right time and changed your life forever. Perhaps it was a friend of yours, someone who always modeled the right type of attitude. Perhaps it was the person who led you to the Lord, who knelt with you in prayer at an altar. Perhaps it was a counselor at a youth camp or a pastor. Perhaps it was your mother or your father who taught you by example and by word what it means to live a Christian life. I will tell you, I know this to be true for us fathers. I know this to be true for all of us believers, that our calling is to fight battles at times. It is to face our enemy. It is to fight on our Lord's side. And if we do that, every one of us will be our own hero. And the Lord will bring about a great victory.